Powering Tomorrow, der Podcast vom Verbund X.
A corporation can't make 20 bets into the different technologies. A corporate VC can make a number of bets. Energy demand was not growing fast until AI, and now it's becoming a real problem. It's all about the entrepreneurs. All progress in society starts with the entrepreneurs who are dreaming a future that does not exist.
Welcome to Empowering Tomorrow, the podcast from Verbund X. Together with top experts, we explore the future of energy in Europe. We talk about innovations, technologies, and bold initiatives that are already shaping a sustainable energy future today. How can we reach a climate-neutral Europe? How can we close the innovation gap? These are the questions we will tackle in this podcast. My name is Franz Zöchbauer. I am the Managing Director of Verbund X, the Innovation and Venture Unit of Verbund, Austria's leading energy company. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to Empowering Tomorrow, the podcast from Verbund X. I'm Franz Zöchbauer, Managing Director of Verbund X, the Innovation and Venture Unit of Verbund. With this episode, we're starting a new season called What's Ahead in 2026. In this season, we look one step forward. We talk about technologies, investments and partnership that will shape energy and innovation in 2026 and the coming years. Today's episode is a very special one for me. My guest and I know each other from the Stanford Executive Program, and we spent intensive weeks together talking about leadership, technology and impact. So this conversation today feels both personal and future-oriented. So I'm very happy to welcome Nicolas Sauvage, president of DDK Ventures, here with us.
Thank you, Franz. It's very special to be with you. And it's nice you mentioned about the SEP, the Stanford program we did together for 6 weeks and got to know each other. But we keep in touch. And now I'm seeing you becoming really strong and very impactful in corporate venturing.
And thanks, Nicolas, that you take the time and that we speak today in Vienna about the future of innovation and energy. DDK Ventures is a global corporate venture capital firm investing in deep tech startups with a strong focus on turning breakthroughs into scalable impact. And in early 2026, Nicolas became the chair of the GCV Leadership Society, the most important global community for corporate venturing leaders. So congratulations, Nicolas, to that position on a global level.
Thank you very much. It's a big honor and a big responsibility.
So today we talk about what's truly on the agenda for 2026, but let's start with a personal contest and positioning. So Nicolas, maybe you can share to the audience on your personal journey into venture capital. I know it started at the Stanford Executive Program, but I'm looking forward to hear what really brought you into that business.
Yeah. I never planned to do corporate VC. If anything, it came from the classroom. As you remember, Jesper Sorensen was our professor talking about exploitation and exploration and how exploration is typically very, very fragile inside a company because exploitation is the bread and butter. This is what the company needs to do and to deliver on. And Jesper Sorensen has this really nice analogy of exploration is a tiny helicopter that flies to another peak in a cloudy day and comes back with information with very little cost to know where to go and where not to go. Well, exploitation is that mountain you're already on, the corporation, trying to go to that top of the mountain. And so I remember when we had this class, that night I went to check online tdk.com and I realized they didn't have a corporate VC. And at that time it was an 83 years old company and they never had a CVC. And you can imagine I must have been quite naive in a way because I'm not Japanese. I don't speak Japanese. I'm not in the headquarters. I came from an acquisition 1 year earlier, and yet I thought I could start the corporate VC for TDK.
And you're still high motivated on doing corporate ventures for TDK. So what keeps you motivated during all the years?
I think that what I love the most is the impact. But one of the things that keeps me motivated is we get a chance to create a corporate VC from first principles. What makes sense versus what has been done before? And I think if I think about corporate venturing, there are many different tool sets you can use. but the corporate VC is one that's well known, but that has made quite a few mistakes along the way. And we could talk about them, but I think now we're becoming very mature as an ecosystem. We start to have really good world-class corporate VCs who are performing both on the strategic front, which you could argue is pre-financial, and the financial front. And this correlation between strategic value and financial value is better and better understood, better and better practiced. And that, I think, gives me hope that what we are doing at TDK Ventures is inspiring others to think from first principles what makes sense for them. I don't want anyone to try to copy and paste what we do at TDK Ventures because it's mostly designed to make sure that we bring value to our limited partners, which is TDK and TDK companies. But thinking from first principle should give many people who are starting a corporate VC or who are looking to improve them to ask the right questions. What it is that they should ask themselves to design their corporate VCs to bring maximum values to the entrepreneurs they want to serve, as well as their mothership.
Nicolas, you're not only leading DDK Ventures, you are also the founder, as you mentioned, of DDK Ventures. Could you maybe briefly describe the mission of DDK Ventures, what it stands for?
The mission of TDK Ventures is to catalyze iconic companies. And this one is really important because catalyze means that it would not happen if we were not there. So it means that we are very ambitious about the ability to bring what we call TDK goodness to our portfolio companies, and but also to TDK teams. Because when we say catalyzing iconic companies, it's basically our portfolio companies who could become iconic, like Grok, I think, is a clear one that has been on the news very recently.
Yeah, congratulations to that. That's really amazing.
Thank you very much. But it could be also internal, organic teams inside TDK where we help them to become iconic. And the same for inorganic, where we would identify a company that TDK could acquire and to make iconic. And so when we think about our mission of catalyze iconic companies, we're thinking about it from the wider spectrum, which is both the companies we invest in, the TDK teams that are building something really novel inside the company, and we want this to scale very high and to become iconic, but also to acquire companies that we think could accelerate our mission at TDK.
You briefly mentioned TDK goodness. Maybe you can explain the concept to us.
Yeah, so TDK goodness is what we call value add that we bring to portfolio companies, but to our ecosystem. So it could be our investing partners, it could be the TDK teams and so on. But it only counts as a TDK goodness when the recipient, typically the CEO or CTO or the teams, the founders of the portfolio company, validate it was useful and valuable to them. So it's very easy for us to, as a VC firm or CVC firm, to think that everything we do is valuable to the recipient. But actually, when you do ask, was it valuable? You get very quickly the feedback, no, that was not useful. This introduction to this investor was not useful. This introduction to this technology was not useful. And so you can very quickly calibrate. And I think for us to have that TDK goodness definition that it only exists if it's validated by the recipient, forces us to have that discipline of always thinking about, is it going to be valuable?
Okay. If you look to startups and deep startups, they often struggle to jump from pilot to real scale, to be really a scale-up. From what you see, where does corporate venture capital make the biggest difference to helping startups in scaling?
I like to think about VC and CVC is all about superpowers. What it is that you as an investor can bring to the entrepreneur to accelerate their journey and to de-risk their journey. And corporate VCs have more superpowers because if it's designed well, you're going to leverage that superpower coming from the mothership to help the entrepreneurs, your portfolio companies. And so as long as you design your corporate VC well, which means you can leverage your mothership to de-risk or to accelerate the project of your portfolio companies, you're in the right track. And like you said, it could be helping them with de-risking the science. It could be a pilot to validate the go-to-market. It could be a number of things that the mothership can bring with a brand, as a value proposition, maybe partnering. when I look at our 50 portfolio companies today, 50, we have a number of them which are customers to TDK. A number of them are partners to TDK, like go-to-market, like Grok would be a good partner. And some of them are suppliers to TDK. And as long as you think about it from that equal win partnership, and equal win matters a lot because if you think about a startup working with a big corporation, when most people say it's a win-win, it happens to be a very small win for the startup and a very big win for the corporation. And it sounds good for the corporation, but 2-3 years down the line, when the startups start to be successful, they're going to move on because they didn't necessarily feel good about that small win, big win. But if you right-size your partnerships to be equal win partnership, you're looking at really long-term partnerships, decades long. You're going to have a sustainable engagement. And this is, at the end of the day, I think what corporate VC should design for, which is to make sure that when you engage with entrepreneurs, as they become the next iconic companies, these unicorns, these market leaders, you don't want them to feel bad about your corporation because of how you started the engagement. You want them to want to work with you, with your mothership. You want them to have high intimacy where they feel like if everything equals, they will always work with you. And that, I think, is how you should think about the engagement at the beginning, is it an equal win?
Thanks, Nicholas, for highlighting that. So it's really about building trustful partnerships that last not only for a couple of weeks, but last really for years and hopefully decades.
Exactly.
And then maybe so both companies, the corporate and the former startup, are big companies and global leaders. TDK Ventures is a global company and global investor. Do you see some trends in the global CVC landscape that you can share with us? It's coming up 2026, 2027.
One thing which is becoming obvious, I know because we discussed it before, is a convergence of electrification, the energy generation and storage and transportation and use, and AI. And we've started investing in that convergence 3-4 years ago. And it's interesting because last year is the first time you start to hear people talking about hyperscalers, AI data centers, not in tops or flops, but in terms of gigawatt. And so it's really interesting to see that trend is now maturing. And what I'm extremely hopeful is human ingenuity. We are going to see so many engineers, innovators, entrepreneurs working on the toughest problems, all the bottlenecks that are needed to deliver the AI promise, but in a responsible way. And for us at TDK Ventures, in a way which decarbonize, which is a responsible electrification. We invested, for example, 3 years ago in nuclear fusion. Last year, we invested in geothermal. We invest in a number of solutions that allows for decarbonizing, but with the right unit economics. Because at the end of the day, and we are an investor, so we really care about this, is to make sure that the unit economics of the project we back gets to a positive unit economic. So it could start negative, which is why venture capital exists. We can make bets like this, but we have to have conviction this is going to improve and the unit economics are going to be good and competitive compared to any type of energy.
If you look globally, do you see some differences in the different regions and the continents about some of these developments?
I think so. I think it's... I just spoke about nuclear fusion. It's got huge tailwinds right now in the US. I think it's seen as the right thing to do from being green, of course, but also for national safety and sovereign protection. I think if you think about geothermal, this is very geographically based. If you think about hydrogen and how it's being tailwinds in one place in the world and headwinds in the other, so I think, yes, I do see a huge differences in terms of energy generation, but it's also true for energy storage. We invested in a company called Peak Energy, which is doing sodium-ion battery storage for hyperscalers. And this is the right way to solve for where you don't need high energy density, but you may not have supply of lithium and cobalt and nickel like we used to have. So when you talk about geographic differences, I think there is also a geopolitical layer to consider.
You mentioned some energy storage and that you have invested in one of these companies. We at Verbund also have a close look on new storage technology and often find it hard really to choose the right technology to scale. What about you? So what about your thoughts? Because there's so many different energy storage technologies at the place and no specific technology would solve all of these problems.
Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons a corporation needs a corporate VC. A corporation can't make 20 bets into the different technologies. A corporate VC can make a number of bets in very orthogonal approaches in terms of technology. And what we do at TDK Ventures is we dream up different type of futures. So we can dream a future where geopolitics gets worse and we don't get supply of materials like we used to and that we used to take for granted. So let's assume a future where we don't get lithium anymore, we don't get cobalt, we don't get nickel. Then a sodium ion solution is perfect. Then we will start dreaming a future where maybe the energy cost gets to zero. What does that world mean? What do we need to invest in today? And so we think about these different type of futures and we backcast from there and we look at what are the gaps to get to that future or to mitigate a negative future. And then we always find entrepreneurs working on this. And so we have this unfair advantage to make multiple bets which are uncorrelated, orthogonal. And as long as some of them work out, we are going to learn a lot. We are going to get really good financial returns. We are going to bring maximum value to our mothership, even if some of them don't work out. And this is one, I think, one of the key differences with the corporation is a corporation cannot afford to make a bet which is going to zero. It's never a good thing. But in venture capital, if you have a portfolio of bets and some don't work out, the maximum you lose is 1x. But if you look at the ones that works out, you could get 10x, 50x, maybe 100x. And that pays back for every zero that you get.
Thinking about a future of energy and electricity costs on zero, that's also something keeping awake us in Verbund because we're a big generator of electricity. And if you look at this scenario, in which fields of startups or sectors are you looking for investments? Because that's, I think, one of the most amazing at the moment. So, what new companies really arise here in the field and also scale quite quickly? We have several examples here in Europe as well, but it would be interesting to have your thoughts on that. Which kind of companies you're looking in this future scenario?
I think, so maybe a good mapping is to think about where does the demand come from? And it's quite obvious that energy demand was not growing fast until AI, and now it's becoming a real problem. And it's not that we can't satisfy the demand, there's also a fairness aspect to it. You can't just give the energy all for AI hyperscaler and then charge more for every consumer. So you have to think about it very responsibly and ethically. And so you need to have this mapping about what it is that we need to do to solve for that problem of demand in a way that can really support this huge and what is actually very expected to be exponential. And the problem with energy is you're looking at grids that have not been updated around the world. You're looking at a number of things. I'll take an example, transformers. And it's funny because for AI, you need transformers, but to power AI, you also need transformers for adapting the voltage. And this is one space where the incumbents have not really innovated for a long time. And so we decided to invest, and it was at the incubation time of a company called Ampersand in Singapore. And it was a spin-off from the University of Singapore, which is really, really strong into power electronics. And they were developing a solid-state transformer, which fit our investment thesis at the time, which is as you start to have more green energy, which are intermittent and variable, you need to be able to communicate and to transfer to the grid in both ways, no longer from one side to the other, but it has to be bidirectional. And you have to have some advantages that solid-state transformer bring. So we invested very early. when we could not prove that this was going to be needed. Now, of course, this is being proven and everyone now is looking for this and you have huge number of years queuing for to get them. But the point is, I think there is value to map where you think the bottlenecks will come from. And in this case, it's not difficult to dream a future where the demand is going to be 10x what it is today. And then you think about all the gaps, all the bottlenecks, all the friction points to get to that 10x of demand. You're going to find amazing entrepreneurs, amazing technology, amazing corporations working on this. And that should be your bets.
You mentioned, Nicolas, that you invested in the spin-off of this Singapore company.
A university.
Yeah, a university. How important are university corporations for you? We at Verbund X, we just launched a new initiative in Europe called Energy Launchpad, where we work closely with ETH Zurich, TU Munich and TU Vienna. So it would be interesting to have your perspective on university corporations.
So we don't have corporations with universities directly. Of course, we talk to them, but it's not like very advanced. But what we do is when we do a deep exploration into a space, we try to identify which startup could be the king of the hill, which basically means 5 to 7 or 10 years from now could be the market leader. And when we do this deep exploration, we do a very big exploration and research on the IP. And that typically helps us to identify which university is working on this gap to get to a future we are dreaming about. Mm-hmm. And so if I think about good examples, so the Singapore for the Transformers was one. One was in Sydney, where the technology to do lithium extraction, direct lithium extraction, was world-class, and that was licensed to a company called Novalis, which we invested in. So that, and you can imagine Australia for the mining industry is very big, very advanced. So that's probably why it made sense for us to find this IP, world-class IP in Sydney. If I think about MetaLens, which is, I mean, if you think about your glasses you're wearing now, they have not changed in 600 years of technology. And here, MetaLens is basically using MetaLenses technology, which is basically flat semiconductor processes, to do the same, if not better, than what optics can do today. And that one was coming from Harvard University, and they are like world-class in terms of IP and innovation, and MetaLens licensed that technology. So I think it's not that we are doing a partnership for each university, but when we identify a world-class IP for a topic we are looking at, this is when we would probably engage with the university and engage with the startup that are being incubated close by.
You mentioned before also the topic of artificial intelligence and the dynamics are now in the energy sector. When you look concerning AI startups, mostly all startups using AI, but are the different regions are you looking for? It's more focusing on the US, but also in Europe?
Worldwide. I think we have to think worldwide. I think you will find amazing innovations coming from different places. Clearly, the US has huge advantage, and I think the internet and then the mobile technology, I think, is giving a chance for the US, but it's true for China as well. I think there is an opportunity for Europe to do very, very well just because of the quality of the universities, the quality of the engineering. If I think about AI and the quality of the software, but the underlying mathematics you need to understand to innovate for the models, both on the training and the inference, I think there is a space for European ingenuity and for European countries' specificities.
Do you also have quantum computing on your radar?
Yes, but quantum computing is one which we explore every 2 to 3 years. Probably every 2 years, and we haven't found a strong why now. And I think that has been our challenge. So even though we are very excited by it, and TDK, our limited partner, is very excited about it, we haven't found something where we felt the strong why now was qualifying for us to invest. But we're still looking, and our investment director, Ankur Saxena, is planning to rebrand this deep exploration on quantum computing this year. So, and I think it's probably going to be on the sensing side, which seems more immediate than other type of quantum computing.
Okay, I think here we can offer in Austria quite a lot with a strong quantum computing society from universities, but also a lot of interesting startups in this field.
I'm glad you talk about this. I'd like to think about countries should also build their superpower. And if I think about innovations, corporate venturing, VCs, I think Austria, the government could be so smart in betting strong on quantum computing, ensuring that you're building market leaders in quantum computing from Austria. If your listeners are from the Austrian government, I really hope they think about, like a VC in a way, which is what it is that's going to be your superpower, which means you're going to be world-class. No one is going to be as good as you are. And part of it is talent, but also talent density. And I think you have that in Austria for quantum.
Yeah, thanks for that recommendation also to the Austrian government. And in these days, they finalize also the new industrial strategy for Austria, and they exactly do that, focusing on specific industries. Not so too many, but on someone, and then really pushing forward that.
At the end, strategy for me is about deciding what not to do. And you just pick a few. But the few you pick, you do it so well. And so I think that's the right approach.
Nicholas, maybe we should come now to the Global Corporate Venturing Leadership Society. You became chair of the Leadership Society earlier this year. So what does this all mean to you personally? It's really an outstanding position for the global CVC community.
It's quite a huge honor because you're chosen to represent corporate venturing on a global basis for hundreds, if not thousands, of corporate VCs. But for me, it's actually paying back in a way as well as paying forward. I remember when I presented the project to start TDK Ventures, I got the okay from the CEO in December 2018. So summer 2018 is when we met during Stanford. I went and I iterated on the proposal, got the okay from the CEO in December 2018. And so at that point, I thought, okay, now I can spend some money to go to the GCV Montreux event, which at that point was in January. And so in January 2019, I went to the GCV Montreux event, GCVI, and that was my first chance to meet many, many corporate VCs and to ask questions. And I keep asking questions, and everyone was so generous with me. Everyone was helping me to understand what's best practices, what's not best practices, what were the mistakes made in the past, how to think about working with VCs, working with other corporate VCs, working with the mothership, how to visualize strategic value, and so on. That was, I think, an accelerant, if not a catalyst, to where we are today, because it helped me to really think about the design of TDK Ventures from first principle with even more data points than if I had not gone. And so I feel a huge sense of gratitude towards GCV because of what they provide as a community. And I think anyone who's listening, who's thinking about doing a corporate VC or are in corporate VC, or they are the CEO of a company who are thinking about doing a corporate VC, I would highly recommend them to go to GCVI in Montreux or maybe the symposium in London, because getting to talk to other corporate VCs and some of the best corporate VCs and getting to learn from them is probably the cheapest way to ensure that you don't make very expensive mistakes and you end up designing your corporate VC exactly the way it's going to maximize value.
As you're now the chair of the Leadership Society, what are you going to put on the agenda for the next years?
So for me, I think the GCV has done really well as building community and sharing best practices. One thing that I think is important is to raise the bar for individuals. And maybe there would be a certification process I would like to propose where people go through trainings. But it's not because you went to the training that you really understood. And so I would want to have some kind of testing to make sure that when people go to training, they do get a certification. That means they really internalize the best practices of corporate venturing. Another idea which I would like to promote, and of course this is a community effort, it's not just a few individuals, is a self-scoring, which would allow corporate VCs to self-score themselves according to best practices, which we know from different surveys and from talking to people who have done really, really well. And that self-scoring is not for you to just brag about outside, but to be able to have that communication with your mothership to say, hey, according to GCV, if we were to do this change, maybe not from the balance sheet, but fund base, or maybe doing championship differently for investment approval, or the investment committee not being 12 people, but maybe 3 people, then the score would be higher. And if we do that kind of self-scoring system, we would allow, I think, corporate VCs who really want to do well, including for their mothership, to negotiate with their mothership for better designs.
Thanks, Nicolas, for that outlook. I think it's quite important to have really good data points, so in order to have a discussion on the same level with the board of the mothership, and that could be really bring value to all of the CVCs around the globe.
And that's why the Keystone survey, which is coming in 2 weeks, which is surveying so many corporate VCs, including on best practices, is going to be such an important data point. And this is what I'm hoping to leverage for any type of self-scoring mechanism.
Okay, great. If you maybe combine the work you're doing with GCV and to the challenges we have in the energy sector, how important is corporate venturing for solving the issues and challenges we have in the energy sector?
Critical. If you think about what I spoke earlier, I think human ingenuity is going to be amazing to try to solve for this powering of AI. And it's not just powering for AI for AI's sake, but if you improve the way you power things, you're going to electrify so much, which is going to create maximum societal impact, positive societal impact. And I think corporate VCs have an ability with their superpowers coming from their mothership to accelerate and de-risk the project of entrepreneurs working in the energy space in a way that VCs cannot do, in a way that universities cannot do, and governments probably can never do. And so I think corporate VCs could be that lubrication of innovation that's needed for energy and AI and everything that you can imagine that needs to be solved in a way that no other actors can do.
In order to wrap up, Nicolas, if your listeners fast forward to 2026, remember just one thing from today's discussion, what should that be?
I think I'm going to be very biased, but it's all about the entrepreneurs. All progress in society starts with the entrepreneurs who are dreaming a future that does not exist and that are going to build it. And they are going to face many, many challenges. And this is where big corporations, corporate VCs, investors, and so many actors can really help to accelerate and de-risk their project. So if there was one takeaway is, how do we maximize the chance, and maybe in Austria the same, how do we maximize the chance for the entrepreneurs, the local entrepreneurs, to be very, very successful?
Thanks, Nicolas. I think that's a quite important message to all of us. And thanks for this forward-looking conversation. It was a real pleasure to have you with us here. It likes continuing our discussions from Stanford. And thanks to all our listeners to Empowering Tomorrow. The future of the energy depends on the decisions we make today. So let's keep the conversation going and let's empower tomorrow together.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nicolas.
Thank you, Franz.